In a few days, on Friday, January the 20th, 2017, a very important event will take place. That is the inauguration of the new President of the United States, Mr. Donald Trump. Now, many political supporters have spent time and money campaigning for their respective party and politicians. But it was finally resolved a few months ago, a month or two ago, and the result was that the American people elected Mr. Trump as the new president. Now, I was very much interested in the election, and I was also very much surprised by it, as were most of you. I was very much interested and surprised by this election because obviously we're living in very, very interesting times. There's an old Chinese proverb that says, may you live in interesting times, and we certainly do. We're living near the time of the end, and the elected president, whoever he or she is going to be obviously involved in these events. And also a less dramatic take is that the new president will affect the economy and the national situation, which in turn affects my family, my city, my church, and it affects me. Now, this brings up some very interesting questions. Should a Christian vote? Does God know who's going to get elected? Does God ever place political leaders in positions of authority? Does he know what's going to happen? Now, today we're going to answer the questions. This question: what attitude should a Christian have about politics? Now, there's all kinds of attitudes about politics. Some were, I don't care. Who's the vice president? I don't know. Who's the president? I think it's to all the way where people are constantly viewing political programs, newscasts, listening to talk shows, and getting very, very much involved in who's going to be elected, why they're going to be elected, and all the issues that go along with it. So it runs a gamut from one end to the other. What should our attitude be? First point: does God ever set up rulers? Does he ever take them down? Or, we can rephrase it another way, did God know who was going to be president? Well, that's a very interesting question. Let's look at the book of Daniel for some insight on this question. We're going to go to Daniel chapter 2. Now, we had our series on prophecy, and we're going to continue that later on. But in Daniel chapter 2, we had the story about Daniel. And Daniel is interpreting the great vision of the statue, the image. And we all know the story. The head of gold was Babylon. The arms and the chest and silver were the Medes and the Persians. The midsection of brass or bronze, depending on which translation you use, were the Greeks. We had the Romans, the Eastern Empire, the Western Empire, the two legs made of iron. And then we had the coming United States of Europe, partly of the Roman Western system, partly of the Roman Eastern system, toes and feet of iron mixed with baked or ceramic clay that doesn't stick together. And in the days of the feet, stone comes out and hits the feet, breaks the image into pieces. It turns into dust, chaff of the summer threshing floors, it says, and the wind blows it away. And God establishes a kingdom. Question is, did God know who was going to get elected? Daniel chapter 2. And let's look at verse 44. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. Now notice verse 37. You, O king, this is Nebuchadnezzar, are king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory. Where did Nebuchadnezzar get this kingdom from? God brought Nebuchadnezzar into power, placed him as the ruler. He has given them into your hand, verse 38, made you ruler of them all. You are this head of gold. Now I want you to notice that God knows what empires are coming. the Medo-Persian, the Greeks, the Romans? Did he know who was going to be the king of the Greek Empire? Remember the ram and the he-goat? And the he-goat has that one horn, which represented the first king. Can you imagine that God already knew that that was going to be one king, that the kingdom was going to be broken into four, and four generals were going to take over the kingdom? This is a long time before it happens. And God either knew or manipulated events so that those things would occur. Now, I want you to notice that Nebuchadnezzar is the head of gold. God told Nebuchadnezzar, you're the head of gold. Notice Daniel chapter 4. Daniel chapter 4. Daniel chapter 4. Now, Nebuchadnezzar has another dream. This one's not about an image. This one is about a large tree. Very large tree. And the beasts of the field and the birds of the air are all supported and live in this large tree. And as the tree is in the height of its power, in the dream he sees it, that some holy ones from the heavens come, cut the tree down, and they put a band around the tree, a brass iron band around the trunk that's been cut off. And then later on, the tree grows up again. Well, what does this mean? Let's go to Daniel chapter 4, verse 23. We're answering, did God know who's going to be president? Verse 23, and insomuch as the king saw a watcher, holy one, coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave its stump and its roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and brass in the tender grass of the field. Let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze with the beast of the field till seven times pass over him. Now you can read what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. What happened to Nebuchadnezzar, at the height of his power, he goes crazy. And he loses his sanity. And apparently he wanders around the palace grounds like an animal on all fours. And after seven times or 7 years, his sanity returns to him. And he becomes king again. This is what happened to Nebuchadnezzar, portrayed by the tree. Verse 24. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king. They shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beast of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven. Seven times a year shall pass over. Notice the next verse, which is what most people who are very interested in who's going to be president don't know. Till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. Just on that scripture, we could probably pretty much indicate that God knows who's going to be president. Either he manipulates events or he can foresee the future. God gives it to whomever he chooses. He made Nebuchadnezzar the king. He's the one that did it. It talks about the tree and all that was going to happen to it. Verse 36. At the same time, my reason returned to me. He's been crazy for 7 years. Reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. And everybody sought him back again, and his kingdom was reestablished. Nebuchadnezzar had an attitude problem. He had the fat head. He thought that this kingdom that he was involved in was just the work of his might and his greatness. And God was humbling him and telling him, I am the one that made you king, and you don't understand this, so I'm going to humble you, and you're going to be like an animal for 7 years. You remember the story about the lion in one of the visions? And the lion represented the Babylonians? And the lion was on all fours and was made to stand on its hind legs like and given the heart of a man? Nebuchadnezzar was the lion. And he was made to stand like a man, and he had understanding. Because after this, he learned what? God is the one that gave me the kingdom. Let's go to Daniel chapter 4, verse 17. Daniel chapter 4, verse 17. This decision is by the decree of the watchers, about the tree and being cut down. And the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he will and sets over it the lowest of men. Why did that man ever become president? God puts in the good ones and he puts in the bad ones from our point of view. Everything is from our point of view. We don't know where history is taking us in a specific sense. Daniel chapter 2. Back to the image. Daniel chapter 2, verse 21. This is Nebuchadnezzar's dream. He's talking, he's trying to get it interpreted. Verse 20, Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever." He's praying to God that he would give him the interpretation of the dream so he wouldn't be killed with the wise men. And so he's praying to God, and God answers his prayer in a dream, telling him what all these things mean. And this is Daniel's response back to God. And he changes the times in verse 31 and the seasons. He removes kings and raises up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. So what does God do? Puts kings in, takes kings out. So therefore, Daniel, I'm going to tell you in your dream, to answer your prayer, about the golden head, the arms, the breast, the legs and all of that, and what kings those are going to be represented by, and where they're coming from. Because I, God, have a plan. Prophetic plan. Daniel chapter 5. Daniel chapter 5, we have here. In Daniel chapter 5, the story of Belshazzar. Belshazzar is probably the grandson of the son of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar has retired. Belshazzar was taking the place of him, running the kingdom, daily duties, and all of that. Nebuchadnezzar has Belshazzar has a feast. They get the golden goblets and the golden cups from the temple. You know, they invaded the temple. They put all these things in storage. They're having an orgy. That's what they did when they drank. They're having an orgy and they're praising the gods in the cups that held the liquids that were used in the oblations during the various feasts in Jerusalem. That's what it says. You can read that. And while they're having this orgy and drinking to the foreign gods, there's a handwriting on the wall. You've been numbered and you've been divided. And the kingdom's going to be given to somebody else. As it's interpreted by who? By Daniel. But notice Daniel chapter 5, verse 21. This is referring back to his father, Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel's telling Belshazzar, you know, you didn't learn the lesson your grandfather, our father, learned, Nebuchadnezzar, about who rules in the hearts, who rules in the kingdom. You don't understand who puts up kings. He's telling this to Belshazzar, whose knees are knocking, literally. Verse 21, then he was driven from the sons of men. This is talking about Nebuchadnezzar. His heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild oxen, donkeys. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till what? Till he knew that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and appoints it over whomever he chooses. Your father or grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, finally got the message that God is the one that places kings in their power and their position. You haven't learned that yet. And God is going to remove the kingdom from you and give it to Darius the Mede that very night. We can read about that later on. So in the book of Daniel, there are many examples that show that God is the one that puts up and sets up and removes various kings. I would say that applies to presidents, prime ministers, and various other officials too. You might say, does that apply to governors? How about to mayors? John chapter 19. How about to lesser officials? John chapter 19. Jesus Christ is going to appear before Pilate. He's going to appear before Pilate. John chapter 19. Verse 9. And went again into the praetorium and said to Jesus, this is Pilate talking to Jesus, where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. Then Pilate said to him, you're not going to speak to me? You can kind of see the sarcasm. You're not speaking to me? Do you not know that I have the power to crucify you and the power to release you? Jesus answered, you could have no power at all against me unless it had been given to you from above. What does that mean? Pilate's position had come from God. Jesus saying, you know, you don't even have, the position you have has been given to you by my Father. You want to get down to basics. So does God appoint governors in the Roman Empire? Certainly does. And it's interesting, if you keep reading, a little side note here, but he's talking to Pilate, and Pilate's talking back to him, and Jesus talks about truth, and Pilate says, what is truth? You've got Jesus Christ, truth personified, truth in the flesh, talking to a Roman governor, and the Roman governor doesn't recognize truth. What about your brother-in-law and your cousin and the lady that does your nails? They're not going to see it either. Unless God is calling them, then they're going to see it. So here we see that Pilate's position came from God. I'd like to read you a story about one of our presidents. And if you've gotten recently the booklet, the United States and the United States and Britain and the Commonwealth and Prophecy, it's got some very interesting information. God manipulated events so that the nations of Britain and the nations of the United States could be founded because of the promises he made to Abraham. And if he's manipulated events down through the course of history so that Britain could be formed, the colonies could be formed, the United States could come to power, do you think that maybe he's manipulated who the leaders are of these countries? This is the Bulletproof George Washington, an account of God's providential care. This is an essay posted online. The American Indian chief looked scornfully at the soldiers on the field before him. How foolish it was to fight as they did, forming their perfect battle lines out in the open, standing shoulder to shoulder in their bright red uniforms with a white cross across it. The British soldiers trained for European war did not break rank, even when braves fired at them from under the safe cover of the forest. The slaughter continued for 2 hours. By then, 1,000 of the 1,500 British soldiers were killed or wounded, while only 30 of the French and Indian warriors firing at them were injured. Not only were the soldiers foolish, but their officers were just as bad, riding on horseback, fully exposed above the men on the ground. They made perfect targets. One by one, the chief's marksmen shot the mounted British officers until only one remained. Now, this was before the war of independence. Quick, let your aim be certain, and he dies, the chief commanded. The warriors leveled their rifles at the last officer on horseback. Round after round was fired at this one man. Twice the officer's horse was shot out from under him. Twice he grabbed a horse left idle when a fellow officer had been shot down. 10, 12, 13 rounds were fired by the sharpshooters. Still, the officer remained unhurt. The native warriors stared at him in disbelief. Their rifles seldom missed their mark. The chief suddenly realized that a mighty power must be shielding this man. "Stop firing," he said. "This one is under the special protection of the Great Spirit." A brave standing nearby added, "I had 17 clear shots at him, and after all, could not bring him to the ground. This man was not born to be killed by a bullet." As the firing slowed, the lieutenant colonel gathered the remaining troops and led the retreat to safety. That evening, as the last of the wounded were being cared for, the officer noticed an odd tear in his coat. This is the officer they've been shooting at. It was a bullet hole. He rolled up his sleeve and looked at his arm directly under the hole. There was not a mark on his skin. Amazed, he took off his coat and found three more bullet holes where the bullets had passed through his coat but stopped before they reached his body. 9 days after the battle, having heard a rumor of his own death, the young lieutenant colonel wrote his brother to confirm that he was very much still alive. This is the letter. "As I have heard since my arrival at this place, a circumstantial account of my death and dying speech, I take this early opportunity of contradicting the first and assuring you that I have not as yet composed the latter. But by the all-powerful dispensation of Providence," providence means God's protection, "I have been protected beyond all human probability or expectations, for I had four bullets through my coat and two horses shot out from under me, yet escaped unhurt, although death was leveling my companions on every side of me." The battle, part of the French and Indian Wars, was fought on July the 9th, 1755, near Fort Duquesne, now the city of Pittsburgh. The 23-year-old officer went on to become the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army and the first president of the United States. In all the years that followed in his long career, many battles and all that, this man, George Washington, was never once wounded in battle. 15 years later, in 1770, George Washington returned to the same Pennsylvania woods. A respected Indian chief, having heard that Washington was in the area, traveled a long way to meet him. He sat down with Washington, and face to face over a council fire, the chief told Washington the following: "I am a chief and ruler over my tribes. My influence extends to the waters of the Great Lakes and to the far blue mountains. I've traveled a long and weary path that I might see the young warrior of the great battle. It was on the day when the white man's blood mixed with the streams of our forest that I first beheld this chief Washington. I called to my young men and said, 'Mark yon tall and daring warrior. He is not of the Redcoat tribe. He has an Indian's wisdom, and as his warrior and his warriors fight as we do, himself alone exposed. Quick, let your aim be certain, and he dies.' Our rifles were leveled, rifles which, but for you, knew not how to miss. 'Twas all in vain. A power mightier far than we shielded you. Seeing you were under the special guardianship of the Great Spirit, we immediately ceased to fire at you. I am old, and I shall soon be gathered to the great council fire of my fathers and the land of the shades. But ere I go, there is something bids me speak in the voice of prophecy.'" This is the chief that was shooting at Washington many years, telling Washington the following: "Listen, the Great Spirit protects that man," pointing at Washington, "and guides his destiny. He will become the chief of nations, and a people yet unborn will hail him as the founder of a mighty empire. I am come to pay homage to the man who is a particular favorite of heaven and who cannot ever die in battle." So this gives you a little idea of how God has protected the various leaders and put them into positions. If you read the booklet, you're going to read in there about Dunkirk. You can also read in there about the Spanish Armada trying to invade Britain and take Britain from being Protestant to being Catholic after they started the Church of England. You can also read in there about the miracle of D-Day and how the weather in the Armada and in Dunkirk and in D-Day played a decisive role in whether there was success or not. And who is the one that guides the weather? So there's lots of indications that God has set up and taken down various kingdoms, rulers, and presidents. Second point, is politics spiritual or physical? Is politics spiritual or physical? Let's go to Daniel. And let's look at Daniel once again. Daniel. Daniel, and we're going to look in Daniel. Chapter 10. Now, Daniel is praying, and he wants to know about what's going to happen at the time of the end. In Daniel chapter 9, we have the 70 weeks prophecy. It talks about the return of Jesus Christ, you know, what time periods in return, what year probably, you know, the decree to rebuild the temple and all of that. We've covered that in some of our prophetic sermons. In Daniel chapter 10, Daniel's praying again. He's been praying for 3 weeks. Notice verse 2. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. It talks about what he was praying for and what happened to him. Notice verse 11. And he said, this is the angel that sent to Daniel to give him the vision in chapter 11 and chapter 12. Daniel 11 and 12 are the words of this angel. This is what the angel is doing before he spouts out the words in 11 and 12 that Daniel records that make up those chapters. The angel says to him in verse 11, O Daniel, man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, Daniel's on all fours. For I have now been sent to you while he was speaking this word, I stood trembling. Then he said to me, and now how long has he been praying and mourning, fasting? 3 weeks, 21 days. Then he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I've come because of your words. Now, wait a minute. So from the first day I started saying this prayer, you were sent to get to me. How long does it take you to get here? That's 21 days ago. Where have you been? We might ask. Verse 13. We're asking, is politics spiritual or physical? But the prince of the kingdoms of Persia withstood me. There is a spiritual prince that guides Persia, or guided Persia, during the time of Daniel. And this spiritual entity, angel, withstood the angel that was sent to Daniel to give Daniel his answer. Michael, verse 13, middle part, Michael, one of the chief princes, you ever heard the term principalities and powers? Principalities is got a prince ruling it. That's where the word principality comes from. So principality is some kind of kingdom. I'd use the word kingdom, we're talking spiritual here, but some kind of kingdom or rulership that's ruled by a prince. That's what principality means. Who is Daniel here? Michael. One of the chief princes. Michael is a chief prince, which means he's over a principality. Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I have been left alone there with the king of Persia. So you got this angel sent to go answer Daniel's prayer. He's got to go through the area of Persia to get to Daniel. The angel that's in charge, a fallen angel that's in charge of Persia, is going to withstand him. Michael, one of the chief princes, comes, gets his back, allowing him to continue on and go to Daniel. That's all going on, brethren, in the spiritual realm. We tend to think that this is it right here. There's a whole other dimension that we don't even realize. We're getting a sneak peek of it right here. Verse 14, now I've come to make you understand what will happen to your people in the latter days. And that's what verse chapter 11 and chapter 12 are. That's what he said. That's what the angel said. Notice what he talks about at the very end. Then he said in verse 20, Do you know why I have come to you? And now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I have gone forth, indeed the prince of Greece will come. So the Persian fallen spirit is in a call for backup from Greece. I know that when I go back to heaven, there's going to be a spiritual battle with this fallen entity that's over Persia, and probably the fallen entity in Greece is going to get involved. So this is all political. These are entities that are set over these various nations. You ever wondered why countries do things the way they do it? How can that leader do that? Colossians. We're talking about spiritual and physical for politics. Is politics spiritual or physical? Is governments physical or spiritual? Are the rulers of the kingdoms of this world, are they spiritually influenced or physically influenced? We know they're physically. I'm showing you here that they're also spiritually. Through spirit essences. We're looking at Colossians chapter 1. Colossians. Colossians chapter 1. Jesus Christ, in verse 15, is an exact copy of God the Father. He's the invisible image of God. That's what it means. Have you ever seen God the Father? No. What does he look like? You've seen Jesus Christ? Yes. Then you know what God the Father looks like. Arms, legs, head. He's not an octopus. You know, he's not some essence and force. He's got a body. Composed of spirit like ours, but it's very much like ours. Verse 16, Christ. For by Christ all things were created that are in heaven and that are on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones, our dominions, our principalities, our powers. I have a marginal rendering for powers. It says authorities. All things were created through him and for him. So Jesus Christ created these heavenly positions of power. Now, let me ask you a question, brethren. Jesus Christ created thrones, dominions, principalities, various authorities. These are angelic. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. And let me ask you to complete the following statement. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 6. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against the spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places. You talk to Daniel, and Daniel would tell you, this is true. The angel that was sent to me was fighting spiritual warfare up in heaven. Our battle, brethren, is not so much against this world. I mean, we have the lust of the world and the pulls of the world. We have ourselves. But the greatest battle is taking place in spiritual realms. I hate to use the word spiritual, because when you use the word spiritual, you tend to think of like church stuff. I mean in a spiritual dimension. There's another battle going on. And we, when we pray, are involved in that battle. We wrestle against these fallen spirits. You remember Jesus Christ, after he fasted for 40 days, taken up to the tower and shown in a moment the kingdoms of the world? And he said, if you'll worship me, I'll make you ruler over all of these. Jesus didn't say, Satan, you don't have these to give to me. No, he didn't say that. He knew. The Bible says that God, that Satan is the ruler of this world. So what I want you to see, brethren, and what I want you to understand, that the spiritual dimension is probably more important than the physical dimension when we look at politics and rulers and countries and things like that. Third point. Several reasons why we as Christians don't take part in the political system. Now, I didn't say we should know what's going on. But, it's not our job to go out and rally for votes. It's not our job to try to convince our brother-in-law or our cousins who to vote for and why one candidate is better than the other. You don't know. You don't know. Ephesians chapter 6. We're already there. And look at verse 19. Paul asked that people would pray for him to give him the strength to say the words he needed to say. And for me, verse 19, that utterance may be given to me, that I may open my mouth boldly to make known the mystery of the gospel. Paul was in chains, waiting to be taken to Rome. He was in chains in Rome, waiting to be executed, as it would turn out. Verse 20, for which I am an ambassador in chains. Brethren, we are ambassadors. Paul was an ambassador of the coming kingdom. He was an ambassador of the coming kingdom. 2 Corinthians. Now, we are citizens of the United States. But this is not our nation. This is not, you know, this nation is here because of the promises made to Abraham and to Isaac. And we are living here. But our kingdom is not of this world. 2 Corinthians. And I understand about, you know, I understand about obeying the laws and about, you know, policemen and all that. I understand all that. Don't take me out of context. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Now then we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were pleading for us. We are ambassadors. A definition of an ambassador. Definition of an ambassador, you can look at it in the dictionary, is very simple. A representative of another country or kingdom living in another country or kingdom. The Russian ambassador has a headquarters in Washington, D.C., I think. He is a citizen of Russia. He is here as a representative of the Russian kingdom. He does not vote. He does not try to change the United States laws. He is simply here living. Our kingdom is not of this world. Let's go to John chapter 18. John chapter 18. We talked about that a while ago when we were looking at Christ speaking to Pilate. John chapter 18. Then Pilate entered the praetorium again, called Jesus and said, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you concerning me?" Pilate answered, Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here." Pilate therefore said to him, "Are you a king?" Jesus answered, "You say right that I am a king. For this cause I was born." Let me ask you a question. Are you a priest and king? Yeah, you and I are. We're being trained right now. We haven't inherited the kingdom yet, but we are being trained right now. Jesus Christ says here that his kingdom was not of this world. Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3. Philippians chapter 3. Philippians. And we're going to look at Philippians chapter 3. And in verse 20. For our citizenship is in heaven. We're sort of like the Russian ambassador in the United States who's saying, our citizenship is in Russia, although I live in the United States. Our citizenship, although we live in the United States, and we're political citizens of the United States, our real citizenship, brethren, is in heaven. It didn't say we were going to go to heaven. It said our citizenship is in heaven. What is coming down from heaven? Jesus Christ and our reward in the kingdom. He's bringing it with him. So it is indeed in heaven to be brought down to us later on. Revelation chapter 18. What about this world? Revelation 18. Revelation 18. Babylon is fallen, brethren. That golden head? That golden head is still alive and well, brethren. It's not going to fall until the feet are hit. To the 10 kings that come up at the very end. We covered that in some of our prophetic sermons. And in chapter 18, we have the fall of Babylon. And notice verse 4. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people. And we're not supposed to be involved in the politics of Babylon and the political systems. I didn't say we shouldn't be interested. There's very good reasons to be interested. But to try to convince people how to vote, and to try to convince and to emphasize one candidate over another. I mean, I just get information and look and watch and see what's going to happen. What can be the problem sometimes? Luke chapter 10. This is what can be the problem sometimes. My cousin asked me the other day, who'd you vote for? And I go, I didn't vote for anybody. I don't vote. He said, smart man. Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. And in verse 38. You remember the story about Mary and Martha? One was so busy serving and the other was busy listening and being taught. We can get like that when it involves some policies. We get so worried and so fretful about what's going to happen. Oh, if this guy gets elected, or if that guy gets elected, or this person, or that woman, or this, or that happens, then this is going to happen. And we fret. Give me some advice, brethren. Put your nose in the Bible. Read what it says. Do some more praying. Point number 4. Even though we traditionally do not involve ourselves in politics and voting, we still must do the following. This is point number 4. 1 Timothy. 1 Timothy. We should do the following, even though we don't vote and involve ourselves in politics. 1 Timothy chapter 2. Notice what Paul tells the brethren to do in verse 1. I exhort you, first of all, that supplication, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings, and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all good godliness and reverence. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior. What is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior is for us to pray for our leaders. When's the last time you prayed for the president? That he would make the right decisions. That's what we're supposed to do. Supposed to pray for our leaders. Romans. This is what we're supposed to do even though we don't involve ourselves in politics. Romans. Romans chapter 13. And Paul here is speaking of the Roman Empire. Romans chapter 13. Verse 1. Let every person or body be subject to the governmental authorities. You got to be subject to the government, brethren. The only exception is if they want you to do something that's contrary to God's law. For there is no authority except from God, and the authorities that exist are appointed by God. Governors, senators. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. If you're a good person, you normally don't have anything to fear from the rulers. You don't have to worry about the policemen if you don't have outstanding warrants. But to evil, do you want to be unafraid of the authority? In other words, Do you want to not worry about the policemen and those that are in authority? What should we do? Do what is good. If you do what's right, you don't have to worry about the policemen. And you will have praise from the same. For he, those in authority, are God's ministers to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword. This is talking about the execution sword, brethren. This was the Romans. Not a very peaceable, likable government. And even with this government, Paul said, you should obey them. For he does not bear the sword in vain. For he's God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. There's somebody outside with a gun. What do I do? Call the policeman. Policeman bears the sword. Been appointed by God. I don't have to worry about it. And it goes in other places about how we should be only obey, or we should obey as long as it doesn't involve disobedience. Now, some people will say, well, you know, you don't vote, so you shouldn't really, how do I say this? If you don't vote, then you did express your opinion. You have to vote to express your opinion. Let me tell you something, brethren. Not voting is expressing an opinion. Not voting is expressing an opinion. It's expressing the opinion that there's nobody worth voting for. Let me give you an example. True example. There was a violinist, a young violinist, who had practiced many, many hours. And he wanted the master violinist to listen to him, to give him pointers on what he could do to be a better violinist. So the master violinist was always too busy to listen to him. So finally, the novice violinist convinced the master violinist to set aside some time to listen to him. So they got into an area where, you know, violins can be played. And as the young violinist began to play, the master violinist fell asleep. And he said, wait a minute. He said, I've arranged all of this, and I wanted your opinion, and you're falling asleep. The master violinist said, sleep is an opinion. It is an opinion. So when we don't vote, brethren, that is an opinion. We're saying that we don't believe that you should vote. Now, there are many problems with the political systems of this world, including, think about the elections, self-promotion, belittling of others, skewing the facts, posturing, and many other disingenuous tactics. But there's the biggest flaw of all, the biggest flaw of all that causes the others we've just mentioned is that humans themselves are basically flawed. What is the problem with humans? It seems that very few, if any, have not conquered their human nature. In other words, brethren, when we have human nature, we are not qualified to rule over others, brethren. We have to first learn to rule ourselves. And very few men and women can do that. So one of the biggest problems is the carnality of the people. We have met the enemy, and it is us. Romans chapter 8. We're in Romans 14. Let's go to Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. Biggest problem with politics is in this verse. Romans chapter 8. Verse 7. Because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can be. So then, those who are in the flesh cannot please God. One of the biggest problems, brethren, with voting is that there are no qualified candidates. Because they all have human nature. The biggest problem with men and women is that men and women are not worthy of ruling over other men and women. That's the biggest problem. And man is struggling to find that out. Now, we can put that into all nice sounding words and, you know, various adjectives, but that's the biggest problem with politics. Men are not worthy to rule over other men. You're going to be a king and a priest And the world tomorrow? Are you going to be human? No, you're going to be converted. You're going to be a son of God. You're no longer going to be human. You'll never find in very few in the Old Testament, usually they all had the Spirit of God, King David and various others, that were good. But in the millennial rule, all of the rulers are going to be resurrected spirit beings. They're going to be kings and priests. Nowhere do you see human people ruling over other humans. And that's going to be the biggest problem. Let's go to Daniel chapter, or the cure for the biggest problem. Let's go to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7. And in verse 24. Daniel chapter 7. This is talking about the vision, Ancient of Days and all of that, the four beasts. Daniel chapter 7. We covered this in one of our prophetic sermons. Daniel chapter 7, verse 24. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom. And another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first ones. Shall subdue three kings. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High. Shall persecute the saints of the Most High. Shall intend to change times and laws. Sabbath been changed? Or the Ten Commandments been changed? The laws about marriage and celibacy been changed? The start of the day been changed from sundown to the middle of the night? I mean, I could go on, but I don't have that much time. Then the saints shall be given into his hands for 3.5 times. But the court shall be seated. They shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it forever. Then the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people, the saints of the Most High. And it talks about an everlasting kingdom, brethren. When it's finally said and done, brethren, human beings are going to be converted into spirit beings, and they are going to be the political leaders of the world tomorrow. Brethren, we have not been called to promote this world's leaders, a particular political party. We understand that even though some political parties are better than others, and some particular countries' politics are better than others, that they are all deeply flawed, all of them. What is the flaw? The flaw is that they are led by human beings that have human nature. God is in the process of changing this. He has devised a system. We are in that plan, brethren. He has devised a system by which our nature can be replaced with his nature. When this happens, that will be the time to involve ourselves in politics. Because when our nature is completely replaced, we will be worthy to rule over other men.